Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Carlos Colosso, Baseball America Draft Podcast, back together again. And got fun stuff to talk about today. We usually do, but we've got a lot to talk about today because you, Carlos, just finished up watching the 18U national team phase two of their team trials. There's a team we're going to talk about. Today is all about the high school class because one thing that's not surprising is when you talk about Team USA's 18U national team, you are talking about the top prep players in the draft class in most years. There are some exceptions of players who opt to not go, who've been left off, all that. But good to see you. And I kind of just will start with that. Like, you just got to spend, and it was a little cooler this time. It wasn't nearly as melty as it was for phase one. But what were, like, overall, what stood out from watching the phase two of the trials?
Yeah, and I just have to say before we get into the players and the team, how nice it is to be back in North Carolina, where going out to Cary is a 15-minute drive for me, and my ability to just see all these players at home and see everything that happens at USA is just awesome. I love it. And phase two was a lot of fun. It was batting practice in a single game a day. We're down to 46 players who are kind of the finalists making their bids to get on the team. And I do think, like you said, Team USA, 18U college national team, you would assume that the top players from those respective demographics are going to be well represented on the team. I think that's the case this year. It's a number of our top players in the class. But I will note, in previous years, maybe my first few years at Baseball America, maybe before that even, there was a challenge for Team USA in getting the top pitchers in particular onto this team, with the various timing of the summer schedule, how much those guys were pitching in showcases, those pitchers wanted to shut things down and not pitch deeper into the fall, which is when Team USA typically plays. I think this year, like they've done in the last few years, they've really done a nice job getting a lot of the top arms in particular on this team. And I think at phase two of the trials, the arms seem to be more dominant than the hitters. That's probably generally the case, regardless of class, regardless of strength. It still is a situation where a lot of the times the hitters are not facing the same pitcher repeatedly because you're cycling through so many arms to try and get them looks, to try and keep guys fresh. So it is a pitching first event typically. That said, I do think the high school pitching in this year is pretty exciting. It feels like a very well-rounded team to me. We can get into kind of what we're maybe expecting the team to look like. But yeah, I think very solid, well-rounded. We went into the summer, JJ, I think maybe being a little bit critical of this high school class. The expectations were that it wasn't going to be great. I still have some specific questions around specific positions in this year's group. But overall, I've been more impressed than I expected to be with just the general talent that we have this year.
I would say the question I wanted to ask with that was kind of like, when it comes to the hitters, like you said, pitchers are normally ahead in an event like this. It's kind of, this is not something where you're going out there and saying, oh, I'm going to give you six innings. So with that being the case, that gives an advantage to the pitcher. You know, you're not, there is no such thing as a three times for the order penalty in national team trials. That's never happening. But on top of that, you said kind of coming into the summer, and we've talked during the summer, the questions about this class on the high school side kind of are more who are the big thumpers in the class than who are the arms, right?
Yeah, there's not a ton. Like, I would say there are a lot of hitters who have really polished offensive approaches. There are a lot of hitters who seem to be natural pure hitters. And then there are a few players who have very obvious power. I don't know that there are a ton of players in this class who really combine both. I think Drake Hopp, who's an outfielder out of Texas, made the final roster. He's maybe been the most well-rounded and impressive hitter for me this summer at both stints of the 18U trials. His combination of impact, zone control, contact skills, just natural hitting ability has been impressive. But even at the very top of the class, Dylan Seward, I think this was the case at Area Codes. I read through Jacob's piece. I wasn't there this year in person, but Dylan Seward hasn't had the kind of blow you away offensive summer that maybe you expect, but he is the sort of player who, I mentioned this when Bobby Witt Jr. was in high school, but even when Bobby Witt Jr. was not collecting a ton of hits or really wowing you in the batter's box, he's doing a lot with his feet on the bases. He's making really impactful defensive plays. He's just that well-rounded sort of player. But we look at the top of our board, guys like Leo Knockley, Carter Hadnott, Max Hemingway. Those are all players who I'm sure there are going to be questions about power. You get into some of the stronger, more physical players further down the list. Brady Cunningham, who was at trials and didn't make the final team. A lot of swing and miss there. And so I do wonder, like, okay, who are our most well-rounded offensive players? But yeah, those are kind of the questions that I would have at this point. And maybe the most obvious player who could fit that is Jacob Seaman. And I think Jacob Seaman being injured, he had a labrum surgery. He's not been playing a lot this summer because of that injury. I think the biggest question mark that I would have with this final Team USA roster is center field. Most of the players who were playing center field in phase two of the trials didn't make the team. And if you look at the outfielders on this roster, most of them look like corner outfielders. Some of the players playing outfield are probably more natural infielders. If Jacob Seaman was healthy and available, I imagine he's probably going to be one of the favorites to kind of lock down that center field position. He is a tremendous impact athlete who certainly has the speed to play there. He maybe would have fit like the biggest question mark I personally have for this roster, but we just didn't get to see him. So that's a bit of a bummer.
There is no PCA, past 18U, making his just absolutely the catches you see in the big leagues. You were seeing those with college 18U national. I mean,
he was robbing home runs with Team USA as a high schooler and was an impeccable defender at the time. I think it's him, Drew Jones, maybe Enrique Bradfield that are like the shortlist of the best high school center field defenders I've seen. We don't seem to have a player like that this year.
Okay, so the roster is set. If you're watching on YouTube, we have the roster up here. And as you would expect, you have a lot of guys listed as utility or as infield or as
only one single player listed as infield, actually.
Yeah. Dylan Seward is an infielder. Everyone else is like, well, let's see how this works. No, Malachi Butler also listed as an infielder.
Perfect. So, okay.
And then Chase Fuller is an infielder / RHP, which obviously you will see a lot of two-way guys on this team as well. Again, to kind of start out, we will get into kind of who's the guys who made it on that may surprise you a little bit or the guys left off. But big picture here, when you look at you said this is, I would say, if you are saying what are kind of the standouts in the high school class, a lot of names from that group are staring at us on this national team roster.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to me, the standout to beyond just being ranked highly, everyone knows who Dylan Seward is in this class at this point. But the players who have impressed me offensively in the lineup, I mentioned Drake Hopp. I think he's been one of the more well-rounded and exciting hitters in the class. Malachi Butler, who you do mention, is also listed as infield. I would assume he's going to be the starting third baseman on this team. He has a very well-rounded game. He's played shortstop. He looks good defensively. He has a big arm. He controls the zone well. He's got some thump. So I think that's a really well-rounded bat that's going to fit somewhere nicely in the middle of this lineup. Sebastian Castillo got a ton of at-bats in phase two, and he seems to really be an impressive offensive player. I'm not sure exactly where his most natural position is defensively, but I would assume he's going to be either starting at first base or trading off time at first base with Chase Fuller, who you mentioned as a two-way player. Those players seem to make a lot of sense at that position for me. So those have been two of the more impressive. I guess Broder Katke as well, who is one of three catchers here. Cooper Collins does come in with some Team USA experience, maybe is the favorite to be the starting catcher just because of that and because of the defensive ability. But with how well Broder Katke was able to just impact the baseball throughout phase two, it wouldn't shock me if he got a lot of ABs, whether that's via the DH, maybe that is as a starting catcher. I'm not exactly sure what the order is going to be at that position specifically. And in the past, we've seen Team USA happy to shuffle through catchers just to make sure no one's getting worn down too much. So those are kind of some of the offensive standouts. There's a ton of pitching here with this USA team. And I'll be really curious to see how they utilize these arms, who they're going to put in starting roles, who they're going to put in relieving roles. I think we can imagine guys like Chase Fuller and Brogan Whicher, who are the two notable two-way players on this team, would be surprising to see them in a starting capacity, I think, just given how they're used, how many innings they've thrown. They seem like premium arms to come out of the pen. But George Ferguson, Connor Salerno, Ethan Gustis, Samir Muhammad, Isaac Vidal, if those are the guys who are getting the primary bulk innings load, I think Team USA is in great shape. We'll get into George Ferguson a little bit later, but these are some of the top pitchers in the class. I'm kind of looking down our list to see the most prominent names at the top of our board who didn't make the final team or maybe weren't even invited to phase one, phase two. Both were Chubb Jones Jr., who has struggled this summer with his control and command, and then Stryker Pence, who I think you can say the same thing. Hasn't thrown a ton of innings, and when he has thrown, it's been real struggles with the control and the command piece. So I think you've got a lot of premium stuff from this group of arms and the polish that a lot of these guys have shown from a strike throwing capacity, from a pitch arsenal capacity, is really impressive to me. So for me, this team, the strength is pitchers.
So along those lines, kind of looking at, you just mentioned, like, okay, those were a couple, you just hit it right there, a couple of the names of players, of pitchers, who some fans maybe, some may be listening going, wait, well, why is, you know, Chubb Jones not on this? Again, he struggled to throw strikes, I would say, a significant amount of the summer from what we've seen. Right. I would throw one other out there I wanted to ask you about, which is Cullen Scott, who just reclassified, relatively recently to be in the 2027 class instead of 28, but at the same time was part of, you know, as one of the younger guys there, was part of, you know, of these trials. Are you surprised at all to not see him as maybe a two-way guy on this?
I'm not necessarily sure. I mean, Cullen Scott obviously has really impressive stuff. I think his outing in phase two this past week maybe pushed him out of consideration, or at least maybe made it easier to take some of the players who threw more strikes than he did. He did struggle with control. He walked two batters in his first inning, walked a batter in the second inning, then walked two more batters in his third inning of work in the outing that we saw from him. He's gotten up to 98 miles per hour. He drove a ball hard. As a hitter, we didn't get a ton of at-bats from him in phase two. And I just think that there are probably other pitchers on this roster who can kind of do what he does and maybe showed a little bit more polish on the mound. Both Chase Fuller and Brogan Whicher have the ability to bring you high impact fastballs, upper 90s velocity, and maybe just did a little bit more with the pitchability and command piece. One thing that's interesting here is because this is a qualifying year for Team USA, you tend to see Team USA taking younger players, more underclass players. That's not the case on this year's roster. I wonder if Cullen Scott didn't reclassify, if he maybe would be more likely to be on the team, because Team USA does like to try and build in that experience if they can without obviously ruining. You don't want to take a lesser player just to do that. But another player who I thought had a chance to make this would be Cohen Poplin, who is one of the top arms in next year's class as well. He looked pretty solid at times, but I think it maybe just highlights how impressive this pitching staff is when I look at it on paper.
I think it's also probably worth mentioning with that, you just hit on something that's kind of important here. This is a team that is going to play games that matter. This is not a showcase where you're just trying to put together the best assemblage of, hey, who are the players who are going to be the names you want to look back on 10 years from now. If you don't throw strikes, it becomes really hard to make your case to be on the team, because you're trying to win games, and nothing makes it harder to win games than if you think that you're going to get 2-3 innings out of a guy, and then you have to get someone up right after that. And then now all of a sudden, then you start running out of innings, then you're starting to figure out how do we get everything covered in a way that if you kind of go with someone with maybe a little bit less pure stuff, but a lot more reliability, that pays off more.
It's a 20-man roster. As I'm looking at it, there are 9 players who have the ability to get on the mound. I'm sure some of these position players have pitched for their high school teams and maybe could be used as like emergency arms if you need. But that does like reinforce why you see so many two-way players on these rosters, because you're really just trying to maximize the roster spots. There are a couple other names who are on the phase two roster who didn't make this list that I want to highlight here, because I was pretty impressed with them. It's a trio of up the middle infield, shortstop, second base, and with the third player, he's got some outfield versatility as well. But Leo Knockley, I thought, had a really good chance to be the starting second baseman on this team. I think his ability to just compete in the batter's box, make a lot of contact, would have made him a no-brainer. Also a rock-solid defender. So he's a hitter who looked good to me, and I'm a little surprised to see didn't make the roster. Another player who kind of fits that same category is Max Hemenway, who's a shortstop out of Florida. And I didn't mention it with Leo Nockley, but he's out of Pennsylvania. Max Hemenway, another middle infielder who I felt like could have easily taken on the second base starting job before assuming that Dylan Seward is going to be the kind of locked in starting shortstop here. He showed an impressive hit tool and can play all over the infield for you. And then the last name that maybe, I don't know if he was like a favorite entering the event, but I was really impressed with him throughout is Juan Diaz, who played second base, shortstop. He played outfield as well. That's an element of Juan Diaz's game that I think is, he's maybe not the most surprising name to me to be left off, but he's the name that I would have been most excited about if I were like on Team USA thinking about his potential role on the roster, because we look at the outfield here, there's not a ton of outfield depth here. And I think Juan Diaz is a player who he maybe didn't have the most impressive results in terms of like, did his balls in play fall for hits? But I was impressed with how frequently he was on the barrel offensively. He really hit the ball hard consistently, and he can play all over the field. So I would have been interested to see if he made the roster. And then the reason all these names are a little bit surprising to me is because Graham Houston did make the team. And I'm not sure that Graham Houston has had the best summer offensively. I come into this as a big Graham Houston fan. I think I'm a pretty strong fan of the Houston family in particular with what Merrick has done in the past. And he is an exceptional defender. He played second base. He's played shortstop. He can play third base. He can play all over the infield. And he's going to be an impact glove for you. But he really, to me, has kind of struggled in the box offensively more than all those three players I just mentioned. And I think you could also say that this is maybe what Team USA is prioritizing. You're prioritizing strike throwers and pitchers you feel comfortable with. They really want to be a fundamentally sound defensive team as well. So perhaps that's why Graham Houston gets the nod over players who I think maybe impressed me a little bit more offensively with the bat, with a Nockley, with a Hemenway, with a Diaz. But Graham Houston, I would imagine, is going to be playing somewhere up the middle defensively. I would assume he's the starting second baseman given the players in this team. And I would imagine hitting towards the bottom of the lineup. But those are some of the names that I think could have had a case.
Is that a little bit, though, potentially mix and match? Because you've got Luby Rincon here as well, who, mm-hmm. you know, again, all these guys, Malachi Butler's a shortstop. Like, all these guys, like, mm-hmm. can't play shortstop. But assuming that we think that Dylan Seward is probably going to get the vast majority of plate appearances, you know, games at shortstop. Like, yeah.
I don't think Dylan Seward had a game.
Yeah. Do you want defense or do you want a little bit more offense, but maybe a little less defense?
Yeah, you definitely have some players where you can mix and match. And like a lot of these players, Graham Houston, Malachi Butler, Jack Swanson, Lubin Rincon, they've played a number of different defensive positions throughout trials, which I think gives you an idea of like how the coaching staff is thinking about using them. I don't believe Dylan Seward played an inning off of shortstop. So if he's not the shortstop every game, that would be a bit of a surprise. And when you have any Team USA national team at the high school level, you're going to have a ton of shortstops, a ton of guys who are playing opposition. Grady Emerson a year ago was not the starting shortstop for Team USA. He was playing third base, and he was the first overall high school player selected as a shortstop. We expect him to be a good one for a long time. He just happened to play alongside Aiden Ruiz, who is a wizard with the glove. But yeah, I would assume Lubin Rincon is going to be starting in right field. Like, it's not his natural position, but he played enough of that position in trials and like trying to piece together the outfield here. Drake Hopp, most of his time came in left field. Sebastian Wilson is the lone outfielder on this final roster who actually got time in center field, I believe. Most of the guys who were playing regular innings at center field, Keenan Bastian, Taylor Dodd, they just didn't make the team. And so I do think you're probably piecing together the best bats you can offensively in the outfield, but the best defenders seem to be kind of centered on the infield to me this year.
I would even throw out though that like maybe that's something that as a workup for the qualifier that they actually like still like they're going to have to experiment a little bit because as you lay it out, like right now Wilson, they have to have someone else who can play center field on this team. And Wilson's the only one who was really doing that.
Right.
So, I mean, you guys have to figure that someone else is going to be at least able to do that.
Right. I'll be really curious who kind of like the next up center fielder is, because there's not an obvious name that jumps out to me from that category. But like you said, they are going to have, I believe, some tune-ups in October, a few days before they head down to the Dominican Republic to kind of work through all of this, see where the players are going to play, what the lineup might look like, and I guess how the pitchers are going to be used.
One other thing I do want to say about this, like our early feedback, I just want to be clear about it. Like, when these rosters have been named in past years, without even kind of going out and looking for it, you know, we've gotten kind of feedback from scouts pretty quickly. Like, I'm not understanding some of these decisions.
Right.
This year feels more when you say like, okay, this guy or this guy, this guy or this guy, there always are going to be tough calls for this.
Right.
But I would say that this year seems like it lacks the, how did they leave these guys off instead of these guys questions that we've seen in some past years.
Yeah. The top players who we didn't see this year are Jacob Seaman, who was injured. So that one makes sense. Grant Westfall, we have as an outfielder out of Kansas, who's ranked pretty highly, who we didn't see here. Carter Hadnott was one that you could say, oh, where was he? But given the number of shortstops we just talked about, that one is at least understandable. But yeah, I don't think there's an obvious name. It's like, why isn't this guy either in consideration or on the roster? Like you said, in the past, there were some names who were like, this guy is maybe one of the better pitchers in the class, and he wasn't at Team USA. A lot of the time, that's not Team USA's fault inherently, because sometimes like the pitchers are just like, mm-hmm. No. But again, to circle back to what we said at the beginning, I do think they've done a really good job recently of getting the best players in the class, whether that's a credit to Team USA for doing a better job recruiting and convincing those players to come, or if it's just a credit to the players for being willing to play for Team USA. And I think it's only beneficial for these guys to get more exposure. And a lot of these guys take obvious pride in playing for the country. And yeah, I don't know that there is like an obvious critique outside of this kind of nitpicking on the edges and on the margins, where whichever player you want to make a case for makes sense to me.
But well, when we come back for this break, we're going to talk about the guy who probably has had the best summer. If we were going to pick a summer star, this is the player I think we'd pick. We'll do that right after this quick break.
It's time to remind everyone why baseball is glorious, especially nowadays where you could think your team is out of it, but they might be back in it again. Let me introduce you to the American League Wildcard, KP, and let's tell everyone why they might need to head back to SeatGeek, grab some more tickets for what is a playoff race before the playoffs actually begin.
Well, speaking about being out of it, I'm an American League East guy, and I'm talking to you Toronto fans. I'm talking to you Baltimore fans. A couple weeks ago, probably not a reason to come out to the games. Look at the standings right now. Both of you teams are right back in this wildcard race.
Rangers fans, we can go on and on. Mariners fans, you might be feeling a little queasy, but you're still in this thing too. So all of you should head to SeatGeek and get yourself 10% off your next set of MLB tickets. 10% off MLB tickets with the promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so that you can use it later.
And we're back. So Carlos, George Ferguson was already a name coming in. This is not like we're something where we go, where did this guy come from? But it does feel like that George Ferguson is a guy who every time he's taken the mound this summer, he just increases kind of the excitement of what this guy could be as a pitcher.
Yeah, I was a little bit bummed to have missed the George Ferguson area code games outing that Jacob has written up. And I think Josh got video of this year. That's already on the site if you want to see that. And George Ferguson, watching him, I think he started the first game of phase two against Ethan Gustas. That was a dynamic pitching matchup. Ethan Gustas went three innings, struck out five batters, didn't allow a hit, a run, a walk, and George Ferguson equaled that. Three innings, struck out six. It was nine up, nine down. And he was just electric. I think it's three pitches that look like they're above average or better. Both the fastball and the changeup, to me, looked plus at times in this outing. His ability to generate power and generate movement, generate power with the fastball and generate movement with the changeup, was extremely impressive to me. I think his changeup might be the best changeup that I've seen this summer. He got five whiffs on that pitch and throws it in the 87 to 89 mile per hour range, which is like pretty stunning velocity for a high school pitcher. There have been multiple high school pitchers we've seen this summer, I think including Cohen Poplin, who is not eligible until next year, by the way, who are throwing 90 mile per hour changeups, which is just ludicrous. And then he rounds out the arsenal with a legitimate breaking ball in the mid 80s that I thought also looked like a potential above average pitch with flashes of really impressive glove side sweep. But it's just, he checks a lot of the boxes that you want to see. I mean, it's a dynamic arsenal. He's a large pitcher. He threw a lot of strikes. So that combination of power, strike throwing ability is going to, I mean, like you said, it's not like this was some off the radar name. We had him as a top 50 ranked player overall in the class coming into the year. I believe he was the number 4 or 5 pitcher overall, right behind Samir Muhammad. He's definitely going to be moving up in our next rankings. I think you could make a case, like if you wanted to say him versus Connor Salerno at this point, like who is the single best high school pitcher in the class? I think George Ferguson has gone out and kind of made his case as that pitcher. Both of these two guys are probably going to have some nitpicking with their deliveries. The way that George Ferguson looks on the mound is just a little bit unconventional. He has a little bit of funk. He has a little bit of effort. But I think at least what I've learned in the past is that if a pitcher is able to repeat and execute his pitches and there are really no question marks that come from that delivery, sometimes guys just look a little bit different. So I'll be curious to see what the pitching analysts and just scouts in general have to say about his delivery and what questions that might give them for projecting him moving forward. But in terms of stuff and execution, he has been electric throughout the summer. And it was a ton of fun to watch him do that on Sunday, I believe it was. There's some of these pitching outings really stick in my memory for a long time. Ethan Hankins, Jensen Hirschkorn, Jared Kelly. I think that George Ferguson outing is maybe going to be one of those for me.
So Ferguson, we don't have every summer outing we have for him, but Synergy Sports does have a lot. We have 6 outings for him right now in kind of the database, and 71% strike percentage in those 6.
Does that include his most recent at USA?
Let's see. Let me check just to make sure. Yeah, August 23rd.
Cool.
So yeah, so that's in there. But 71% strike percentage overall, 77% strike percentage with his fastball.
That's ludicrous.
That's a crazy number. And you talk about his changeup, 71% strike percentage, 70% miss percentage when they do swing at it. And then his slider, which as you said, it's like an 83 to 85 mile an hour pitch, but his slider, 85% miss percentage this summer.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been utterly dominant. If he's not one or two in this starting rotation for Team USA, I would be surprised. If it was me, I'd be starting either him or Connor Salerno in game one. I don't think you can go wrong with either of those pitchers.
He's faced 62 batters in those 6 outings, 37 Ks, 3 walks, 19 balls in play, 5 hits. 089, 177, 143. So when we say that he's been the star of the summer, again, that does not currently have his area code outing in there, but that's not going to change his statistics in a negative way, we can say, because he was also very impressive at area code.
I'm seeing what his actual line was. So he at area codes, he was 3 scoreless, 2 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, touched 96 there. And I think he was up 2 miles per hour higher. Yeah, he touched a 98 and had touched 97 at least 6 times for me at the USA game. So with a little bit harder fastball.
So Ferguson, like I said, he very well could end up being our number one pitching prospect. But you've also talked about this. This is something that we're trying to continue to calibrate. But we also know that
there's a little bit of a ceiling here.
Yeah. That may put you into being like a top 15-ish player in the class, right?
Right. And even with this year's college pitching, it'll be really interesting to see, like, would right now on our overall list, we've got Cason Evans and William Schmidt at 14 and 15. Like, if you wanted to say, like, hey, those guys, you take over high school pitcher, even though George Ferguson has been as dominant as he has been, that's understandable to me. If you'd rather have a Camden Clark at Southern Miss or an Aiden King who has multiple years of SEC starter track record, I mean, that makes sense to me. We've got right now Connor Salerno, our top high school pitcher in the class, 21 overall. That feels like a reasonable range to start our top pitcher in the class right now. And going too much higher than that might be a little bullish. I'd say what we've talked about, and people who listen to the podcast regularly will kind of know our thought process here and where we're trying to correct for. But one thing we should keep in mind as we move forward is regardless of how dominant these arms have been this summer, the high school pitchers, we should be cautious about how aggressive we want to be in moving them up an overall board. On the high school list, there's more ability to move those guys around and get them up the board and higher and kind of illustrate their up arrow movement. And he's going to move up the board regardless, but just try not to get into a situation where post-summer, all of our high school pitchers are stuffed because they just dominated in these events that are set up for them to succeed. And then in March and April, we find them sliding behind college pitchers.
I would say a couple things with that. One is like, yeah, most of his outings have been of the three inning or shorter variety, which if you're having to face George Ferguson once in a game, you know, good luck.
Good luck.
But also on top of that, I would say this is not, as you've just laid out, this is not last year. Last year, you could kind of, if you were a team, and we saw this to some extent in the draft, which was when you got to that 15 range, you could talk yourself into a high school pitcher conceivably because you're like, these guys just are better than the college guy. That college pitching class lacked that kind of front end depth of guys where you're like, this guy's performed. He's got track record. He's got durability. He has all these things. Why would you not take him first?
Right.
Last year was kind of more of you had like you kind of the old adage of you can have it fast, you can have it cheap, or you can have it good. Pick two of the three. With that pitching class last year, it was almost like pick two of the three, right? You can have durable with track record, but not stuff, or you can have stuff, but not a track record with, you know, with some durability, or you can have durability and stuff, but not a track record. You didn't really have the kind of the group who had all that together. This year, if everyone stays healthy, or even a guy who we said who's coming back from injury, we can't say that Dax Whitney's staying healthy, but he has track record, he has stuff. And if he's healthy again, you could say, well, he's probably at least as durable as the high school class guys. Like that's where this, there may be a little bit more of a ceiling here.
Right.
If you're a prep pitcher because of that.
100%. Yeah, but definitely something to keep in mind. And for Team USA, yeah, they're going to reconvene October 17th through 19th, and then they're going to begin international play in the DR on October 22nd. So we'll continue to track those guys remotely as they attempt to. I think it'll be three straight winning gold in this qualifier. If they are able to achieve it, that is going to be the expectation for this team heading into that event. Yeah, and we'll see that what they look
the,
like it'll be.
Yes. The 18U team, you hate to say it, like it is, it, you could call it unfair, but the expectation is like the anything short of winning or gold in a year that it is the tournament is kind of a disappointment because that 18U team has that kind of track record.
Right, and I think that USA Baseball for this specific classification, this specific team, I think has performed enough in the past to provide that, to make that be your expectation without it being critical. Like they are good enough and they have the talent to where that should be the expectation. And I don't know, maybe that sounds tough, but like they've done it for years now. So continuing to kind of hold that status does seem to be like it should be the expectation for the team. And like we said, I think this is a roster that looks pretty well-rounded. I will be curious to see just kind of what the rotations are looking like, what the lineup actually looks like. And obviously getting more at-bats from the hitters is always going to be useful to see. So it's a fun group of players, and I'm excited to continue watching them.
We're going to get to see going to see some more this weekend as we record this. We're heading up to Baltimore for the Baseball Factory Under Armour All-American game. So we'll get to see more of the top players in the class. We're doing that. But thank you for joining us on the Baseball America Draft Podcast. Do check out overbaseballamerica.com. All the stuff that we have, you know, from kind of the events of the summer, get you ready for, we want you to be ahead of everyone else that, you know, if you follow the draft, we want you to be understanding kind of where you're going to be able to understand the movement kind of all the way through, not just, you know, if you want to, not just right before the draft. So check that out over at baseballamerica.com. Please, again, as you can, like and subscribe. That does help the channel as well. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.